This podcast is from Allegro Non Troppo on Joy Melbourne 94.9 radio station, Melbourne, Australia, and is produced for you by Adam, Peter and Robert. This is Allegro Non Troppo across Australia on the Community Radio Network, presented by Adam Stobbs
and Peter Forty. We're talking today about gay stereotypes. Now, does this sound familiar? Limp-wristed and talks with a lisp, insatiable sex drive, good cook, listens to Barbara Streisand CDs, camp and bitchy, hates sports but loves to knit, enjoys dressing up, sometimes in women's clothing, has sex without needing to know their partner's name and visits the gym regularly. Or, how about, fat and wears tats, drinks beer, smokes, wears a chick shirt and blue jeans and men's underwear, has a pierced tongue, rides a motorbike, aggressive, hates men, vomits and farts a lot, and spells women with a Y. These are just some of the ways that gay men and lesbians are perceived by heterosexuals and even some gays and lesbians. How true to life is this? Do we deserve to be depicted this way? Who do we blame? How responsible are we for creating our own image? We're going to explore these questions and others on today's topic, gay and lesbian stereotypes, here on Allegro Non Troppo.
Well, that's quite an interesting list of stereotypical images that seem to fit gay and lesbian people, some of us anyway. I look down the list of the stereotypes that I've put together and I think, which ones do I think I look like? And then I've asked some of my friends, which one
That's
of these...
That's very brave of you.
Which one of these... Oh, some of them quite bitchy and they ticked everything, even the ones that were rather contradictory. But they... There's a couple of interesting points that I'd like to talk about is the visual image. The visual image. Is there anything, if you look at person A and person B, whether they be male or female, if you look at them, is there anything that makes one person say, this person is homosexual, this person is heterosexual? What do you see different? And the answer is there's nothing different. They're all, there's variations in behaviour and mannerisms, but physically when you look at people, there's no difference. There has been research to suggest that perhaps there is something different in the brain department during development or something that may predispose some people to be homosexual. But there's no concrete proof. There is no known real cause for homosexuality. There seems to be sort of all of these theories as to what it might be.
Unfortunately, using the word cause, it makes it sound as though it's some kind of a disease or something. It's just a variation on the norm. It's just that we happen to be in the minority, though. I don't believe anything causes homosexuality any more than causes somebody to be male or female.
Yeah, but you know what? One of the defining things that happens in our society, and it happens in the gay and lesbian community, is the language that we use. And the language people use, like the one that really upsets, well, it doesn't upset me, I think it's inappropriate, is people say somebody admitted they were gay. Now, the word admit, it's defined by guilt. It's a guilt-defining statement. People admit they're gay. They admit to a crime. They admit to something. And so it puts a negative impression on homosexuality straight away. But I don't know. I could be wrong, but I don't think I am. Let's have a couple of look at people in the media and people well known in Australian society who are homosexual and see if any of this particular these images fit in. Now there's a couple of very famous homosexuals in Australia, especially in the media. John Michael Howson is one of my favourite. Well, he's quite out about everything.
Yeah.
Now what characteristics, mannerisms about John Michael Howson would you say?
Well,
is he bitchy?
Why don't we get sued or anything?
No, no, we're not being defamatory. We're doing this as supportive.
I think he's, I don't know, his speech mannerisms, I think, are quite distinct and can be perceived as a gay way of speaking. I can't, it's very hard to define it. And yeah, I can't be any more specific than that.
But you know what? He's a really great ambassador for our community because people respect him. He never talks about sex or anything like that. He's complete, and he doesn't send gay people up. You know what I mean?
No.
He does it in a very supportive way. So he doesn't push any particular barrow for anything to do with gay and lesbian stuff, but the fact that he's come out as being gay, he's good like that because people sort of look up to him and respect him. So yes, there are elements about his presentation style on radio and on television that perhaps would perceive him to be gay, but it's quite positive. You see, it comes back to the point of visibility. How visible are gay and lesbian people in media? How visible are they? And how has this visibility changed over the years? During the 1930s and 40s in movies, homosexuals were often depicted as evil. They were quite often the evil protagonist.
Well, even before then, when Charlie Chaplin was making his movies, in at least one of those movies, he gave a sissy, what he called a sissy, a very hard time in a barber's shop, slapping him around and sticking shaving foam in his face and all that kind of thing.
Yep.
And the sissy was portrayed as being extremely effeminate and fat, by the way.
Do you know, there's an entertainer around called Roland Rocchicelli.
Yes.
One of the few times I've ever seen the footy show, they had something about there was a gay AFL support thing happening. I think there were some gay magpies or something. And he came on the footy show and pretended to be this absolutely outrageous, effeminate homosexual. Mm. And they were trying to sort of send up the footy show. Oh, I just found that so offensive.
Well, the thing is, it was offensive. And
did you see it?
Yes, I did. Wasn't Roland in a tutu or something?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm not blaming him. I just think that the people who put him up to it and they organised that sketch, I found that really, really, really offensive. Yeah. And so sometimes the fact that these stereotypical images are used to define and portray our community, they can actually be very hurtful. Now, I'm thinking of the people growing up in isolated communities in rural and regional Australia.
And not just them. I remember when I was, before I came out, so to speak, one of the things that prevented me from coming out was the idea that if I was going to accept my homosexuality, I was going to turn into a limp-wristed, lisping queen. Now, obviously, that didn't happen. I'm as butch and masculine as anybody around, I suppose.
But, oh, right.
At the time, it scared me that that's all I knew about gay people was that that's the way they behaved. And where did I get this from? From the media and also from other people's perceptions.
Unfortunately, popular culture does define a lot of the stereotypical imagery that we see. One of the things that's been really good for Australian gay and lesbian people and a positive image was a couple of months ago at the Olympics, Matthew Mitchum, you know, the diver. Yeah. He that was just great. And there have been other people that have come out recently who've just by the fact that they've said, look, I'm gay, and they don't particularly go over the top. I'm thinking Anthony Kalia, you know, the singer Anthony Kalia.
Yes.
Matthew Mitchum and Anthony Kalia, the fact that they don't want to make a big noise about the fact that they're homosexuals, have actually done so much more for the community than all of the flag waving and everything. David Graham, when he was on Big Brother, we had him in a few weeks ago.
Well, I mean, David Graham and Matthew Mitchum, both of them, as far as, particularly Matthew Mitchum, he didn't come out in that sense. He just was out already, and he was who he was. He didn't make any secret of it, you know. And I admire him for that, and I hope that's the way that the younger generation see it, that you don't have to come out as though you're hiding away and then you come out onto the scene. You are who you are right from the beginning.
Mm. What are some of the other, you know, they say one of the stereotypes is that gay men hate sport. Well, that's not true.
I fit into that stereotype.
Well, I do too. I see, you know, if I see a ball coming towards me and it's in the air, my natural tendency is to run away and scream. I have to admit, I fit that stereotype quite well.
Yeah.
But one of the most successful organisations, community organisations, that have been in various states are the gay and lesbian sporting clubs. And in fact, we had the gay and lesbian Asia Pacific Out Games in 2007, 2008 in Victoria, and that was just huge. And the gay games we had in Sydney a few years ago were just remarkable. And this is an interesting little point I want to share with our audience. We know that there are a few sporting figures, well-known ones at the moment who are on the verge of coming out.
Do we?
Mm. I'm not mentioning any names. I'm not even going to hint at what sport it might be. But there are a couple of them. There's not one. There's actually a few. But the thing that's stopping them coming out?
What's that?
Money.
Mm.
They want to be lured out. And I don't know whether this is completely ethical or not. They don't want to lose sponsorship contracts.
Yeah.
But okay. Then if they do come out, they want to do it in a way that somebody's going to pay them a lot of money for their story. We look at other sporting people who've come out, like Ian Roberts, the rugby star. I mean, he's done really well since he came out. He's written a book.
Didn't he come out after he'd finished playing?
Yes. Mm. That's usually the case, is when they've finished and retired and they're not going to be put into any particular spotlight. Now, Jason Ackermanis, a couple of months ago in the Herald in Melbourne, wrote a very good article saying that, you know, that gays and sport do exist. So the fact that some gay people hate sport, most don't. But that's usually one of the perceptions that's brought about. They also say that one of the other common stereotypes is that gay men are effeminate in voice and gesture. Okay, that, I have to say, is actually, there are a lot of them.
There are, yes. And the fact that I didn't want to turn into that showed my own prejudices at the time, you know.
Mm.
I know a young guy who is quite obviously gay. You've only got to look at him and watch him walking down the street to know that he's gay. But every Saturday in the winter, he'd have his footy scarf on and his team colours, and he'd be off to the footy and cheering his team on, which was fantastic. And another guy I knew who is equally, if not more, effeminate, which really made me feel good about Melbourne, because he said he's been to various parts of the world. When he came to Melbourne, it's the only city that he came to where nobody ever called out or made fun of him or told him he was a poof and that kind of thing.
I often wonder how much of this effeminate gesture and stuff is actually genetic, how much of it's learned. I just wanted to tell you my experience. I have a 24-year-old gay son, and I hadn't seen him between the ages of 12 and 18. When he turned up on my doorstep at 18, and I hadn't seen him for some years, right, I had no idea. I opened the door, I nearly fell over, because he's an absolute clone of me. Just looks so much like me, except he's got thick blonde hair. I invited him in, and I've got in my lounge room, you know, he's having some crisis in his life and he wanted to come and blame me for everything. I invited him in and he stood in the lounge room. I've got this huge mirror. Have you seen the big mirror in my lounge room? I've got this huge mirror. I was standing talking to him and he was talking to me. And my God, you know what? Well, I've got all these puffy hand gestures, you know. I clutch my temple and I put my hands up in the sort of pointing to the sky.
Looks like a preacher.
He's never seen me do any of this. He's got all my same girly puffy gestures. Exactly the same. How come he's got them? There must be something. It must be, I don't know, it's genetic, it's passed down. So, there are some gay men who are effeminate and who have a lot of gestures. There are some who don't, and there are some men who have it, and they hate themselves because they have it. You're listening to Adam and Pete here on Allegro Non Troppo across Australia on the Community Radio Network. We're talking today on Allegro Non Troppo about stereotypes. We're breaking down stereotypes by reinforcing them. We're looking at some of the stereotypes that communities and societies have about gay and lesbian people. It was quite interesting. We've had some feedback from our listeners locally, and we were saying that a lot of people perceive gay men to be effeminate, etc. But we had a very interesting point from one of our correspondents who said that she knows a lot of straight men who are very effeminate.
Yeah. Well, that's what I have met somebody like that. I met a girlfriend of mine was going out with this guy I hadn't met. Eventually, I got to meet him, and I said to her, "Look, he's gay." Quite clearly, I mean, he had all the mannerisms, and he was very passive, but he was really chasing after her. And maybe in the end, he would turn out to be gay. I don't know, but according to her, no, he's not. He's straight, you know.
It's interesting, isn't it? You see, we define and we judge people
exactly
And that's part of the thing. We should just accept everybody as they are, but of course we can't. It's
human nature, I think, to put people into little categories, you know, not necessarily gay and lesbian, but, you know, when you meet somebody, within about 3 seconds, apparently, you make a judgment on that person.
Yep.
And it's a non-verbal judgment.
But when you look, you see, our opinions and the way we judge people are fed by media. What was the name of that English comedian who used to have a show?
Larry Grayson.
Shut that door. Was that him?
Larry Grayson.
Yeah. I mean, he typified a lot of gay things.
Well, he did, and he had a friend, Everard, who, when he baked bread, he never needed yeast to make it rise, apparently.
Okay, it was all full of double
meanings. Yeah.
Innuendo and double entendres. Look at other gay men who reinforce the stereotype. I mean, you know that show that I absolutely hated on television, and I watched bits of it just frequently to remind myself how much I hated the fact that it reinforced gay stereotypes. It was Queer Eye for the Straight Guy.
So you watched it to
bits
reinforce
of it. I didn't
your
watch
own
all of it.
Impression of it.
I watched it to see if I was wrong. I watched the bits of it to see if I was wrong. But every time I watched it, it was Carlton.
I didn't mind that, actually.
Carlton Kressley. Well, John Laws and other broadcasters, I think, have been in trouble with the law. Or not the law, but with various bodies for saying things about Carlton Kressley. But I don't like the image that he portrays for gay and lesbian people personally, because I don't think it's very positive.
Well, why? I mean, he's just a human being doing a show on television.
Yeah, but the whole
why
show...
Why should that mean you don't like him for being who he is?
I don't like the way that show and the way that show goes to air, because I think it reinforces gay stereotypes. You know Will and Grace, the TV show Will and Grace?
Mm.
I didn't like that for the same reason. It was actually quite a good show. Because I canned it for years and I'd never actually seen it. But when I sat down and watched a few episodes, it was actually quite funny.
Well, I mean, I disagree with you. I think shows like that tend to aid the process of acclimatising the heterosexual community to... seeing gay people as just human beings.
All right, Queer as Folk. Did you see the American version?
Yes, I did.
And the English version?
I have it, actually. I have the full set.
Okay. Now, what about that? What does that do for stereotyping gay men?
Probably not a lot.
No, it's...
But it was very entertaining.
But it was good in the point that it looked at a lot of issues that gay and lesbian people face in their lives, but it drew them out to such huge lengths and made stories out of them. And I think it created a lot of mythology. A lot of the stuff that was in there was actually doesn't really exist, but they drew it out to such a huge extent. Can we talk a little bit about lesbian women?
Of course we can.
Because there's stereotypical images of lesbian women, and I have to admit to being one of those who, for the sake of trying to have a sense of humour, I've tried to play on those a little bit. But some of the things I've said about lesbian women have been shocking over the years, yet I don't mean any of it in any judgmental way. I've just done it as a sort of like an endearment term when I call you an ugly old bugger, Peter. It's actually true, isn't it?
You'd have to ask somebody else. I can't make a judgment on that. So,
do all lesbians have pierced tongues? Do you know any? Look,
I know a number of lesbians, and to my knowledge, none of them has a pierced tongue.
You can't actually do universal conversion of a proposition. Some women with pierced tongues, are they lesbians? Are all lesbians therefore people with pierced tongues? I teach a radio to a group of young gay and lesbian people, right? And out of the girls, the lesbian girls that we have, you'd be surprised at how many of them have pierced tongues.
But a lot of straight women have pierced tongues too. I mean, I have actually met straight women with pierced tongues, but no lesbians.
Is it a sexual thing? Is there something sexual about a pierced
tongue?
You'd
have to have the guy out.
I believe there is, but I don't know. We don't condone cigarettes here, but it's one of the things we've noticed. There's a lot of lesbians that I know smoke roll-your-own cigarettes.
Roll-your-own?
Rollies. They call them rollies.
I don't know where you get this from.
Off the internet. The internet. Now, I just warn everybody, I'm going to talk about something a little bit sexual here. That's not particularly rude. It's just that you may not wish to listen. Okay. The other thing that I asked some of the lesbians at our radio station, what are some of the common misperceptions that people have about lesbians? And three of them said to me, oh, they think lesbians all use dildos.
Don't they?
Well, she said, no,
I
don't.
Okay.
Why? Do you think they do?
I don't know from personal experience, but I think if I was a lesbian, I'd be down the sex shop looking
for... Well, you're not. So how would you know? You see, you're reinforcing the stereotype.
Well, exactly.
There.
I don't know how accurate that is.
The other common perception is that most lesbians are lesbians because they haven't had sex with the right man. They just need to have one really good,
you just need a good man. Yeah.
And then you'll be fine. That's another one. Mm. The other thing is a lot of lesbians, they think that the reason that they're lesbians, a lot of straight people think lesbians are lesbians because they haven't actually had sex with a man yet anyway. Mm. And once
they haven't discovered the real thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And they say that a lot of reason women are lesbians because they had dominant fathers.
Oh, it's like the
gay men having dominant women.
Dominant mothers.
My father's very dominant in our family.
You should be a lesbian, by the way.
I should be. the other things that a lot of lesbians, they say lesbians drink beer, wear tracksuit bottoms and men's socks, ride motorbikes, have a lot of fist fights. That's all rubbish.
It is rubbish, but I remember my first introduction to a group of lesbians when I first came out. So it was all very new to me. And I went to a bar, a gay bar, and there was a table of about a dozen or so women, lesbian women. And the thing that struck me was that, first of all, they shouted at each other a lot. Then later on, they were drinking beer. And later on, as the night progressed, they were throwing beer over each other and followed by the beer glass. And I, at that time, thought, all lesbians, this is what lesbians are. This is how they all are. And it was only when I met a few other women that I realised that that was just an isolated case.
In the years we've been working at this radio station, you and I have got to know quite a lot of lesbians, and none of them are like that.
No, of course they're not.
They're all... And Peter and I used to hang out with a group of lesbians in the late 90s. We had a close friend who was a presenter here, and we used to hang out with her, and they were what's called lipstick lesbians.
Yes.
They all used to dress absolutely beautifully. Mm. They wore makeup. They did all of the... They looked like models, supermodels, some of them. Mm. The only thing that they had that made them stood out from other women is all of these women used Izumiyaki perfume.
Did they?
Yeah, Izumiyaki?
No, I never heard of it.
Yeah. No, they all had Izumiyaki on, so I could always tell when they'd been around, because, yes, there's Izumiyaki in the air.
Do you remember we were around at, I know the person you're talking about, we were around her place and she had about half a dozen friends there. When it was time to leave, we all gave each one of them a hug, bar one, who just held her hand out to shake hands. She wouldn't.
She didn't want you near
her. She didn't
want
you either. She didn't want any guy giving her a hug.
Well, actually, I'm a bit like that. I tend not to want people to hug me.
But you're people in general. I think this person was specifically aimed at guys.
Can we focus on that at the moment? Let's see if our listening audience across Australia, what's wrong with me? Why don't I like people I don't know hugging me?
I don't think you like anybody hugging you, do you?
No.
Whether you know them or not.
Yeah, no, I'm not into being hugged.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not a psychologist. But maybe something's happened in the past that makes you fear closeness.
5 years ago, I was, I'd hug everybody around. Now I just don't want to do it. Mm. Don't know why. You're listening to Adam and Peter here on Allegro Non Troppo. We're looking at some of the stereotypes. Now, I wanted just to talk a little bit about two gay men, again, who reinforce the stereotype. One of them quite formative in my years. You remember Kenneth Williams? He's dead now.
Yeah.
Famous English comedian.
Yeah. Used to be Carry On movies and Beyond Our Ken, Round the Horn, all those radio programs that a lot of people may not even have heard of.
Yes, he was very, very gay. And Liberace. Liberace.
He never actually came out.
No, he sued that many people because he was, I'm not gay, I'm straight, da-da-da, yet he died of HIV, so it came out quite obviously that he did. You're listening to Adam and Peter across Australia on the Community Radio Network presenting Allegro Non Troppo. Today, it's Gay Stereotypes.
Hi, this is Mary Schneider, Australia's Queen of Yodeling, on Allegro Non Troppo with Adam and Peter.
We're analysing and talking about gay stereotypes as they have come to evolve over the years. And we've had some interesting feedback from our listener. And one of the things is someone suggested that perhaps these stereotypes, you should let them go and that they don't need to exist anymore. But they always will exist, I'm afraid. I think they're one of these things that will be around forever. It's part of human nature is to pigeonhole, judge and stereotype people and put them into little categories to make them easy to deal with.
Unfortunately, that's a negative part of stereotyping. It's a bit like any other forms of prejudice. It means that you don't need to go to the trouble of seeing that person as an individual.
Mm. You know, you come out with some very smart stuff.
I'm very wise, aren't I?
I went to quite a lot of schools because my parents were politicians and they were somewhat itinerant, so we lived in lots of different places around Australia, indeed around the world. But the worst time I had at school was Cairns State High School, I think. Would be probably the worst. And I remember, I think I was in year 10, and the teacher, the homeroom teacher and a couple of the other teachers used to encourage the other kids to beat me. Said, because you look so gay and you act so gay and you look like such a poofter, if the other kids beat you up every time you're like that, you'll thank us when you grow up because you won't be a poofter.
Oh, interesting logic.
And it was quite interesting because I remember one of the deputy principals, there were a number of deputy principals, one of them who was quite masculine and used to show off, he gave me a challenge once. He said, "Hey, Stobbs, poofter. How come you're such a poofter, you poofter?" I thought, my God, an intellectual challenge. I haven't had one of those before. But, well, the reason I'm a poofter is because I like it. And I'm good at it, I suppose. He didn't appreciate my answers.
Probably wouldn't.
And I didn't stay at that school for very long, but it was just quite interesting. You can see when you get that sort of mentality being thrown at you. No one but people growing up in communities.
When I was at school, we had this PE teacher, a physical education teacher, who was one of these college jock types, you know, butch and masculine and all that. And I was a pretty weedy little kid, you know, very thin. And I suppose he picked up on me being, you know, not as aggressive as most of the boys there. And he'd make everybody, all the boys, do the physical education with no shirts on. And he actually made me do some physical exercise that he knew I couldn't do, and then he just laughed at me. And I was devastated at the time. I felt really awful.
Do you think this was because he thought you might be gay?
Possibly. I don't know.
You're not really sure.
No.
I just want to say to our local audience, thank you for all of the SMS messages and emails. Because we broadcast on the satellite network, we can't refer to them directly on air. And the reason there's a little pause at the end and the start of this thing is that I edited it out before we send it up to the satellite. So thank you for all the feedback, but unfortunately we can't mention them on air. You're listening to Allegro Non Troppo on 3JOY across Australia in the Community Radio Network. We're talking about gay stereotypes. Here's a couple of other little things that we'll talk about, just briefly, a couple that we mention, is that they say that gay men have a lot of women friends that hang around with them. The local term we have for this is fag hag.
Mm.
Fag hags. Do you think that's horrible? Or is it reasonable?
I think it can be used in an affectionate way, like the same as you can call somebody a bastard and mean it affectionately, or you can also mean it in a derogatory way. I don't think most women, in fact, I had a woman friend, or have a woman friend, who refers to herself as a fag hag. She says, "I just love gay guys."
Okay, well, let's embrace and empower our community by saying that it's a positive thing. We love the fag hags that we have.
And I love the ones that flirt with you too, because that's happened to me, believe it or not, not that long ago. And I met this woman. She was a lovely person. I'd never met her before. I was at a party and she was, we got talking, and then she was making it quite clear that she thought I was a bit of all right. And then eventually she said, "You realise I'm flirting with you?" And I thought, duh, yes. And she knew I was gay. So she knew that she could flirt without having to necessarily worry about it getting out of hand.
That's right. Well, that happens to me too. Women will flirt with me because they know that I'm not going to make a pass on them or try and pick them up. The last thing I just wanted to say about this, the phenomena of fag hags, is we like having fag hags around us. It's okay. And it's good. And it's a sense of community.
Allegro Non Troppo is distributed nationally via satellite on the Community Radio Network.
Community Radio Network, Allegro Non Troppo, Adam Stobbs, Peter Forte, talking about gay stereotypes. The point I wanted to just make, which wasn't really clear, is about fag hags, is that we love having straight women at our venues. It's good, because they come there because they're in a non-threatening scene. But what's happened to a couple of clubs in Melbourne and in Sydney is this. The gay guys go to this club, right, and then they bring their straight girlfriends. Okay, and they're having such a great time, and the girls love it there because it's safe. But then you start getting the couple of straight guys coming in, you know, go to this venue, there's lots of available women. And then you get more and more straight guys going, and then it starts becoming threatening for the gay men because you get these straight guys, and they generally not very nice to the gay guys. And then gay guys stop going because there's all of these straight guys going there. And then what happens? It becomes a straight club.
Yep.
That's happened to so many. A very famous one in Oxford Street's closed now, but that happened. It started off as a gay club, then the girls came, the fag hags came, and then straight men came, and it was just, yeah. So that's how things evolve quite often. Now, we're talking about some of the things that they say about us, some of the stereotypes that have been heaped on gay people. The ex-Premier of Victoria recently made a statement that alluded that all gay men are pedophiles. Mm. That was Jeff Kennett in the case of the Bonnie Doon football player.
And exactly as I predicted, he sat tight, didn't respond to any complaints, and eventually it fizzles out, which usually happens, you know, if they sit tight enough.
If you think it's fizzled out, you've got another
thing. Well, I hope it hasn't.
No, it won't. There's quite a few people in this community are outraged that he dare draw that length of bow and call us pedophiles. But that's the sort of thing that happens all the time. You see, they also say that gay men are promiscuous and sleep around a lot.
Not sure what the difference is between the two.
Well, but, I don't sleep around a lot. I have to say I probably have sex with quite a lot of people.
You wouldn't get much sleep, though, would you?
That's right. We don't do much sleeping. And you know what? I empower myself with that. I don't. People say, look down my nose and think, But the thing is, most men, if they had the opportunity, would like so to be. I think it's very much a male thing.
You think it's a bit of jealousy there?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, because I know some.
Sorry, I was just going to say that there's a couple I know. One of our neighbours at home, we spend a lot of time with them, and The wife says if my husband ever strayed, that would be it. That would be an end of it. I wouldn't want to know him again. You know, she was very adamant about that. And I thought, yeah, I mean, I can understand where she's coming from. But most gay people, I think, my doctor actually said to me that no, there's no such thing as monogamy in a gay relationship. Eventually, one or both of you will have sex outside the relationship.
I think this is one of the reasons why I think that gay men in particular, not being judgmental against any other part of our communities, I think gay men have got it sorted pretty well. We have long-term, committed, loving relationships, and occasionally there might be some dysfunctional thing that happens and there's an outside sexual contact, and it doesn't necessarily threaten or impinge the main relationship. Now, this is quite at odds with what a lot of people think about marriage and stuff like that, but I think we've got it pretty well sorted out, and we've got it pretty good. You think about it, gay people, they say, you know, if they're promiscuous, well, my goodness, we've got it made when it comes to meeting people, haven't we? We've got huge clubs, great clubs and places to go and meet people. We've also got these sex on premises venues where you can go, and the reason they exist is so that can make sure everybody's indulging in safe sexual practices. We've got those, and we've got these huge plethora of internet fora where you can go and meet people. So for meeting people, we've got it made.
But with people's opinion that gay guys, men in particular, have a lot of sex, do you think there's any real difference between gays and heterosexual men, apart from the fact that if a heterosexual guy is with a female, do females' minds work in a different way to guys, in that they're not as forgiving of their partner having sex outside the relationship?
I don't know. I think probably the way we've been brought up with our various religious backgrounds, most religions sort of preach this monogamous thing, and so I think that it's been indoctrinated into us. You know, people quite say to me a lot in life, you look at the animal kingdom and look at how things are in nature. Well, that's rubbish, because animals don't have sex for pleasure. They have sex for procreation. Humans don't have sex to procreate, or they occasionally do.
You don't
we have sex
animals
for pleasure.
Have sex for pleasure?
No, they don't.
Well, tell that to the person whose dog's dancing on their leg.
That's not pleasure. That's it's in instinct. It's doing it instinct. It's not pleasure.
It looks pretty happy at the time.
You don't know what you're talking about. That's you're right. Listening to Adam and Peter, Allegro Non Troppo. So, also, they say a lot of gay men are hypochondriacs.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know where that comes from. I mean,
they say that they're vain. They say that we're vain. Well, how much have I spent on Botox and cosmetic processes?
I guess there's a bit of a thin line between being vain and taking a pride in your appearance, isn't there?
The other thing they say, gay people, it's just a phase you're going through. You'll grow out of it.
Oh, how often have we heard that?
How often have we heard that?
Or where did I go wrong?
Yes. Or then the other thing, you'll see some straight people, I say a good-looking woman or a good-looking man, say, oh, no, he's gay or she's a lesbian. They'll say, what a waste.
Yeah.
A waste of
how
what?
How dare you?
How dare you? The other thing is they say a lot of gay men wear lip gloss and makeup. Ever worn makeup or lip gloss?
Never.
Me either. Have solaria tans.
We go to solarium.
I do. Used to. I don't need more because I don't want to get skin cancer. That we enjoy shopping. Gay men enjoy shopping.
It depends what I'm shopping for. I don't enjoy shopping in general. If I'm going for something specifically that I want or need, even if I don't need it, I want it, then I find it pleasurable.
I hate shopping.
But what if you're going for a new, say, a new MP3 player or...
Yeah, I like that.
Something. Yeah, that's what I mean.
It's not shopping. I research on the internet. Like, I've just bought quite a lot of new audio equipment. I've just bought a new huge multi-stage polyphonic synthesizer. Cost tens of thousands of dollars, but I shopped... I researched for that. So, yeah, I don't think we like shopping. I hate supermarkets and I hate shopping centres. It's full of children. I just want to run away and scream. We live their lives according... gay men and lesbians live their lives according to pop culture. Rubbish!
I think maybe the youth, but that's not the domain necessarily of gay people, just the youth in general.
I think that's true. I think if we want to stereotype anything, we'll stereotype young people as that, as being a regurgitating popular culture. Listen, I like this one. Gay men are useless around heavy machinery. Are we?
I don't know. What sort of heavy machinery?
Can you drive a forklift?
No, but...
Have you got a lawnmower?
No, I haven't got a lawn.
Well, I think probably
maybe
that's
pointless,
true.
Pointless, really, wouldn't it?
I don't know any gay men who drive large machineries. I don't know any gay crane drivers.
Lawnmowers hardly comes under the classification of heavy machinery, though.
Have you tried to lift one? Obviously, you haven't. The other thing is, in the coming out process, they say that gay men and lesbians, that the last people to know are usually their family. They come out to everybody else, but their families aren't.
Well, it's easy to come out to other people, isn't it?
I guess so. I mean, I think it's harder coming out to families because we're scared of the reaction of our families. And, you know, if you're cut off from your family, if there's any likelihood that you're going to be cut off from your family, then that's why there's a great deal of trepidation and coming out to your family, because the consequences are more serious. If you come out to friends and they don't like it and they don't want to know you, you can always find other friends.
Yeah.
But if you come out to your family and they don't want to know you, then you can't find. Do you think lesbians are generally more sensible than gay men? This was the other thing that somebody said to me. They said, generally, all the lesbians that they know are more sensible than gay men.
No, I don't believe that at all. No, I don't believe that.
I don't either. What about people who are transgendered?
What about them?
Is there a stereotype that can... Are there stereotypes?
No, absolutely not.
I know a lot of transgendered people, and I can't say that there's really any particular stereotype that I notice about any of them, that I can categorise them. Some of them, especially the men going to be females, you can... Visually, they don't particularly look that convincing as women. But I tend not to notice now because I've known them for so long.
When you get to know them, you don't notice it so much, I think.
I remember there's a very well-known local person who dresses in drag. It's a drag queen, so I don't think it's a transsexual. It's Kay Sarah.
Mm.
And a number of years ago, we were at Midsummer, and Kay was dressed in this huge, outrageous outfit with a gigantic, huge red fluoro wig. And I was just talking to Kay, and I said, oh, we're going home, do you want a lift? And she said, oh, Kay, that'd be great. So we're walking down St Kilda Road, chit-chatting, and there was all these cars were stopping and slowing down, and people with their mouths open and these looks of horror. And we stopped at traffic lights to walk across the road, and the lights changed and the cars hadn't moved. They were all staring. What the hell are they looking at? I thought, oh my God, of course. I've got Kay Sarah dressed up in this huge outfit. But I just completely didn't notice. It's just a part of my life. They say that gay men are mummy's boys and teacher's pet. Were you a mummy's boy?
Yeah, I suppose I was a bit.
Were you?
Well, I had a very ineffectual father, so my mother was the dominating parent.
No, I'm not that at all. It's completely... I'm close to my parents on more of an intellectual level than an emotive level. My dad comes across... He's really amazing. He comes across as being sort of fairly ordinary, but he's a very, very, very shrewd and smart politician.
I was a teacher's pet, but only in the subjects that I excelled at, and because I was better than everybody else.
Oh, yeah?
It's interesting how other kids call you a creep because you take an interest in a subject, you know, and you want to know more about it, then you're a creep.
Okay.
That's what I was called.
I didn't get much.
I never got any. And the interesting thing is, when I was at school, there were kids who were quite effeminate, but they didn't get... teased or anything.
Okay. Where did you go to school? Was this in Australia?
In Leicester, in England.
In England, okay. I went to school in various countries. I have to say the only time I actually experienced anything homophobic was here in Australia, but then I started to go to school and sexual tendencies came out while I was at school. The interesting thing is I went to several boarding schools, and some of the schools that I went to were supposed to have been havens of homosexuality, right? Boarding school, all boys boarding school. I never saw it.
Maybe you weren't looking in the right place.
Well, no, I didn't actually see it. No, I was pretty sort of... I was a bit... I did see some of it. When I was in year 10, I was the school pimp, I suppose, in a way, because I used to set up things for other people. The Christian Brothers that I went to school with, everybody says, oh, you went to boarding school, Christian Brothers, you would have... There was none of that. I never saw any form of anything like that. The Christian Brothers were fantastic to us.
Well, I was in the Scouts, and I have to say that I had a few good times in the Scouts when I was about 14 or 15.
You're listening to Adam and Peter. We're talking about gay stereotypes and community responses to gay stereotypes. Did you know that in Australia the majority of gay and lesbian people actually live outside of the metropolitan area? There seems to be this process that happens, is people who live in the country, when they realise that they're gay or lesbian, they tend in their late teens or early 20s to move to cities, to metropolitan centres. And they live there till they're... This is something I was reading on the internet. They live there till their 40s, and then they move back out into the country. So a lot of older gay and lesbian people tend to move away from the urban centres and move out into the suburbs and to the surrounding countryside. What do you think?
What do I think? Well, what is there to think about that?
How come you still live in the city?
I've never lived in the country.
Haven't you?
My partner has, and he has absolutely no desire to leave, go back to the country to live.
The average age in Australia that people realise their sexual orientation is 15.
I envy them.
Do you?
I was 27, I think, before I came out. What a waste of time.
I think I was about 16 or 17, but I didn't do much about it. But you know what? I'm so glad I came out when I was young.
I went through years of depression and feeling bad about myself. Mm-hmm. Until the day I came out, it was like a huge weight lifting from my shoulders. It was the most wonderful, liberating experience.
It is a liberating experience, and something that we recommend to our listener that you do in your own good time. Mm. Only you will know when it's time for you.
I never told my family.
You never told them?
Never told. I was actually... Well, it was easier for me because I was living in Australia and they were back in England. But there was no need for them to know.
My family were fine with it. It was not an issue for them. The issue for my family, which was worse than me being gay, is the fact that I had a partner of a different cultural background.
Mm.
I had an Indian partner, and my parents were quite horrified with that. I couldn't believe it. Here's my parents, completely tolerant and accepting of the fact that I was gay, but completely racist. And we had years of dealing with that. They're fine now, but at the time that was the big thing for them. I thought it was quite ironic, you know, saying I'm gay, and Mum says, oh, well, that's fine, dear, no problem, we've known that.
Mm.
The big things for my parents, I only found out many years later, was my parents threw their entire religious faith out of the window when they found out I was gay, because the church that they went to said to them, your son is evil.
Yeah.
And you have to cast him out. And it was at that point my parents completely changed against religion. Mm. Yeah. It's been an interesting discussion. Thank you, Peter.
It has. Thank you, Adam.
Yes, we'll be back next week. We've got quite another intense show for you next week. We're going to be looking at the issues of sexual abuse and talking to people who've been through this process, how it's affected and impacted on their lives and how they've got it back together. Mm. We'll be back with Allegro Non Troppo next week on the Community Radio Network.